Welcome to the Grad Student Coach Podcast. This is Jed Irvin. I had to take last week off to take care of some stuff around the house, so I missed a week, but I'm back now. The topic today is confrontation over ideas. Now, we can have conflicting opinions about ideas with any collaborator, whether it's a student and advisor or between students on our research team, for example. But what does it really mean to have conflict over an idea? Well, usually it's the kind of situation where you're trying to figure out a way to move forward and you want to move forward in the best way. And two or more people have different ideas on what the best way should be. And so there needs to be a discussion about it. Now, the ideal situation in a collaboration would be that if you had to engage over any difference of opinion, that after you had that engagement, the working relationship would be at least as good, perhaps even better than it was before. It would not be ideal that afterwards the working relationship had deteriorated. It can be a challenge sometimes when working through differences to make it an experience where the relationship is either maintained or improved if the people involved are very attached to their ideas. So we're going to kick off this series on confrontation by focusing first on why it is that we resist others' ideas. Why it is that we arrive at a discussion primed to be defensive around our idea. So we're going to explore what it means to be attached to an idea. Well, what does the notion of attachment come from? The attachment is basically a way of thinking about feelings that are happening. If I'm really attached to an idea, I've fallen in love with the idea for one reason or another. Now, if we're talking about ideas that can impact people's lives, then it's quite natural that there will be high feelings associated with this, like political policy ideas and so forth. Because if we think that something is wrong about the policy, that there will be an injustice going on, that means our injustice detector has been firing off. That is a situation where your feelings are going to come into play and give you a lot of energy around an idea. But what about ideas and issues that don't trigger our injustice detector at all? Why would we have any feelings about those? Why would we care if one idea was better than another? So let's think into this a little bit. And as we think into this, we're going to hold the question of the central question for this episode: how do we work through disagreements over ideas in a way that strengthens the collaboration rather than making it more difficult? Okay, let's start with an example situation. Imagine that I'm a student on a research team that needs to run a user study to generate data for a paper. Now, we're at a team meeting, and the assignment for this week is, okay, everybody's going to go off and think of potential designs for this user study. And we all go off for the week, and we come back a week later, and a few of us have thought through different design approaches, and we need to talk through it. Well, I come back with what I'll call the Jed design, and I'm going to make up a name for a teammate. Let's go with Nathan. So teammate Nathan comes back with the Nathan design. So Nathan presents his idea first, but I quote, the Jed design is better because of a number of factors. Some of these come from my rational brain and its findings from when it thought things through. The other factors arise from my feeling brain. Let's focus on the feeling factors first. So earlier, I used the phrase falling in love with an idea. So let's think into this a little bit. What are the reasons we can fall in love with an idea? Well, in my own case, I've identified 5 different pathways where I've become attached to ideas, 5 different reasons. And typically, this happens in a process that we are oblivious to, kind of a subconscious thing. And so the first one is that, let's say it's the case where I've gone off for a week and I've thought through a problem very carefully and I've come up with a solution after a great deliberation. So I spent a lot of time. So there's this sunk time cost aspect where I've devoted a certain amount of my precious time to this process, and I don't want that time to have been wasted. So I really have an emotional investment in me not having wasted time. So for example, if I came back and realized that I had completely misunderstood the problem and spent that whole week on something totally useless, that would be kind of a crushing feeling, especially if there was time pressure to get something done. Okay, so the sunk time cost, that's one. Second, we have this concept of the ego, which is our sense of self, kind of in relation to other people. Like, do other people think we are good or up to the task and so forth? And do we think we're good and up to the task? And so if I consider myself to be a very bright person who is capable of generating good ideas, then if I bring an idea to the group and they think it's good, then that will reinforce the very positive self-image that I have because I like to look good, and this helps me look good. This builds my reputation of being a competent teammate. Okay, that's 2. Now, the third one is a pretty subtle one. I've noticed it in myself. It's not as strong as 1 and 2, but it is palpable. So when you think through a set of issues over and over again, deeply, you kind of get familiar with the landscape. That landscape begins to sort of feel like home in a way. You have a relationship of sorts with the journey that you've made. So for example, if I ask you, what have you been working on all week? And you are able to tell me a story about all the little nooks and crannies and challenges that you've had to work through, it's kind of like you're taking me on a tour of your town. You're like, look at this little facet of the problem. This is across the street from where I grew up. And this park over here, it's a beautiful place. I have fond memories there. It's not as vivid as that, perhaps, but there is a sense of comfort you have when you've rolled around in a problem for a long time, and you've kind of mastered the landscape, and you can say anything about that landscape. And if you bring this idea to a meeting and it gets tossed aside in favor of some other idea, the psychological response I've caught myself having is like, oh no, I don't know that town. I'm going to have to learn this new landscape really quickly so I can be of benefit to the project in that new landscape. Oh no, I got to learn all sorts of stuff. That's very stressful. It would be so much better if I could just stay in my town where I know everything. And so that's another pull to having your solution be the winning one. Now, the fourth feeling factor is pride. Now, pride is different than ego. For me, pride is the feeling that if I had a really hard problem, and I conquered it, I have control over it. I've mastered something. And in my opinion, this feeling, the good feeling you get when you've mastered something, that's the central dopamine hit for any problem solver, any puzzle solver. So you're given a whole landscape that's a mess. You need to find a solution. That means you create order out of chaos and can move the ball down the field. And that is just the best feeling if you're somebody who likes puzzles. Okay, that's 4. Now there's a 5th one, which is the satisfaction you get from helping the other people. So if you bring a solution that's really helpful to the team, that's a great feeling. And you then become part of the history of that project because your idea helped move it along from point A to point B. So these are five different angles that your emotional self is going to try to attach itself to your solution. Okay, so what are the implications of this? Well, in the episode titled Anchor Management, I talked about how feelings can behave like anchors to hold beliefs in place. So in this case, the belief would be, my idea is going to be the better idea, and those feeling factors are going to try to anchor that position. What this means is that when I show up to the meeting with my idea and the anchors in place, I'll be in a posture where I'm motivated and energized to defend my idea. In other words, I'll be defensive around my idea before I even hear an alternative. And the consequences of this is that I'm less open to alternatives, even if they are better. Now, the strength of these emotional attachments will vary widely, depending on the situation, depending on the people involved, depending on how much time I've put into it. But if you pay attention to this, you'll start noticing these things are real and have an effect. It would be a useful exercise for you to think about all of these and to think and feel into whether they are in play for you. So because openness to each other's ideas, even contrary ideas, is necessary for high bandwidth collaborations, it's important to know that some of our brain wiring is just priming us for opposition to those ideas. So it's something we really need to be aware of. So before, when I said I, quote, know, unquote, that my idea is better and that these feeling factors were part of the reason, really what that means is that my belief that the idea is better is going to be entrenched somewhat by these feeling factors. Okay, now on to the rational part, the rational factor. So here's the part that is in our awareness. It's our conscious train of thought that we've gone through, and there are going to be things that we know about the situation that led us to our conclusions. And so I know I consider the availability of our lab space, which is highly constrained, and my thinking, and I know that Nathan didn't because he didn't mention it when he talked through his plan. So now I know his plan just won't work, and thus my idea is worth fighting for from a quality of idea standpoint. However, the energy to have a fight or to advocate strongly always comes from feelings. And since some of the feelings we're bringing to bear really have nothing to do with the actual quality of the idea, it's interesting because we always hear people arguing for their idea using the words that map to the rational factor, what they've thought through, but the energy around that isn't just coming from the attachment to the quality of the idea. Could you imagine somebody arguing a point by saying something like, well, I think we should go with my idea because otherwise my ego is going to take a hit. Or we should go with my idea because otherwise I'm going to have to learn a whole bunch of other stuff. So not only is that ridiculous, it just won't happen because most of these motivations are just subconscious. We're not even aware that they're going on. Okay, so knowing all this, how does this play into answering our central question for this conflict series, which is, how do we engage over differences in a way that lets our relationships stay intact or improve rather than degrade? And what we've arrived at is that we know that we're going to be kind of primed for opposition, which is going against this goal. So the first step is to loosen our grip on the ideas that we bring. It's a good practice to always consider your best ideas as being incomplete, as being open for improvement by others. What you really want, you really do want the best idea going forward as a team, because if it is the best idea, then the ride is going to be more pleasant for everybody. If your idea holds sway and it's not the best idea, then you're just going to be experiencing pain or turbulence or more effort down the road, because you'll have to make adjustments and you'll be under more time pressure. You really do want the best idea. So thinking about what you've done in this week of going off to figure out what the best plan would be, you're really helping to chart out a space of information where you don't have access to all the information. There's going to be different expertise coming from different people. There's going to be different levels of experience coming from different people. There's going to be different connections that people have you don't have. Everybody's going to bring something different to that work. And what you want to do is you want to leverage, for this particular problem, what is the best we can do with all that all of us have to bring to the table. So this means you don't want to be primed for resistance. You want to be primed for openness. You want to see the meeting as an opportunity for improving what you have, or to have elements of what you bring as being able to improve what other people have brought. So to drive this home further, here's a sentence that those of you who have not yet mastered English are going to consider a nightmare. Sometimes we know what it is that we don't know, but sometimes we do not know what it is that we do not know. So let me translate this with our example of the Jed plan and the Nathan plan. My Jed plan is better because it takes into account the lab availability, which, given the constraints as I understand them, is critical to take into account. But what if Nathan knows someone who works in a different lab and happens to know that we'll be able to make use of that lab, so there really isn't a lab constraint at all? I didn't know about this other lab, so my plan may not be the best after all. So always hold open the possibility that there is more out there that you don't know that could be leveraged, and that your teammates or your advisor may be the key to accessing that missing information. Now, this is usually obvious with an advisor, but maybe not so much with teammates. So consider the beautiful work of art that is your solution that you are bringing to be a work in progress that can be made even more amazing. Or maybe it will be the case that part of your idea will be what makes some other person's work of art even more amazing. So I think that's going to cover it for today. We're going to talk more about confrontation and conflict next week, where we take a careful look at how it is that when we communicate with each other over difference, our choices of how we say things, which is usually habit-driven, can have tremendous impact on the quality of the relationships going forward, and that this can happen in subtle and mysterious ways. All right, I hope this was all useful. Thanks for joining me. Signing off from Lather, Rinse, Repeat Studios. We'll see you next time on the Grad Student Coach. To help me keep this podcast going, you can support it at patreon.com/gradstudentcoach. There you can access additional resources and join the community to help guide content of future podcasts. You can also follow me on Twitter @GradStudyCoach.